To the Red, White, and Rude. I'm your host, William Del Pilar, and this is Unraveled, the day of the bullet and the 2025 files explosion. We're slamming into November 22nd, 1963. JFK's last ride through Dallas. The shots that rocked the nation and the Dealey Plaza madness. Then the 2025 JFK files hit. Social media is raging with conspiracies, CIA shadows, Soviet twists, and a smoking gun shredding the lone gunman lie. Fasten your seatbelt and strap on your iron dome because the shots are flying. Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar. This is our inaugural show of the Red, White, and Rude. We apologize for the blow up of our logo, but hey, it's an explosive episode today. And I'd like to welcome my co-host here. He's a co-host on literally every show, and that is the G-Man, G-Mangani. And we have a special guest with us today, and that's why I decided to go live with this one. His name is Adam Cameron, and he is that how you say Cameron or Cameron?
Doesn't matter.
All right, close enough.
Cameron's fine.
Cameron, he is our resident JFK sleuth. Adam, tell us a little bit about yourself since we all know who G-Man is.
Well, I like walks on the beach. no, I'm a musician, a professional musician, but I'm also an operations manager. But my three main things I love is politics, religion, and music, so I'm hit at parties.
Oh, I got to ask, in religion in what way?
Oh, I love just dissecting and exploring all religions.
Oh, there you go. My dad was a, I grew up in a fundamentalist household and with a New Age father. So I got what I think of the best and worst of both sides of that, which kind of has made me very open to religion, but I do have my beliefs. Gee, how you been doing?
Good, man. I'm really fired up to talk about JFK. This is going to be an interesting episode to get out of, you know, real-time politics and get more into historical politics. So,
oh, I get that. I get that. Real quick, gentlemen, before we get going, though, for the audience, what are your initial thoughts? Gene, we'll start with you, then we'll go to Adam.
Well, yeah, I am a reformed conspiracy theorist. I used to think there were three or four shooters in Dealey Plaza, all firing shots. And I even heard one theorist say that there were up to 13 shots. And while I didn't believe that many shots, I did believe that there was a wider conspiracy. And a lot of it was due to Oliver Stone's JFK movie. But now I'm back to the lone gunman theory, although I'm not completely out of the conspiracy theory part of it, because I don't think Oswald worked alone, even though I think he was the lone gunman. So we'll be looking at some of the JFK files here, and I think some of what I've seen out there probably starts to make me think, yeah, I think the CIA probably knew he was working there, and some bad elements in there said, hey, why don't we move the motorcade over this way? And gotcha. And right in the crosshairs of Oswald. That's kind of my initial thought.
Adam, let's take this moment for you to tell us your overall thoughts before we get into the nitty gritty. But also, tell us about what got you interested. You're really into this stuff, I understand.
Oh yeah, I'm really big into conspiracies. I actually became a conspiracy theorist about a year ago, and you could thank an ex-CIA whistleblower for that one. His name is Kevin Shipp, by the way, if you ever want to check him out. Yeah, I really didn't really think about JFK and Oswald. I'm like, maybe there was a second shooter. And then I started really checking out the CIA. And so that's when everything started changing. And it was probably about a good 7-8 months ago is when I really delved right into it. But I've always been just big on documentaries and just watching everything about JFK for the past 10, 15 years.
I gotta admit, fellas, I read this big old thick old book about 30 years ago when I was younger, and I was reading all kinds of books on serial killers, the Whitechapel, you know, the Ripper murders, and all kinds of things. But I've got to be honest, the JFK never really caught my fancy, and I read that book, and I can't remember much of it, but I think that's because I thought it was such a deep lie, we would never discover anything, and I thought, you know, the Warren Commission, it just clouded over. It didn't matter what anybody said. The Warren Commission, it's done, it's over with, you know? And now all these files have been released, and I got to be honest. I was telling my wife today, she's like, what are you guys going to talk about? So we talk about JFK. And she asked me, and I said, doing my research for the show, it seemed to me that all this information doesn't, it's just a smoking gun. It's like nothing hits on the spot. So, for example, we're going to talk about the CIA, a little bit about the mafia, even Israel, but nothing's like that's definite. Before we get started, I said that once already. But my final thought is, do you think, Adam, that the actual evidence, papers or whatnot, are still buried or were destroyed?
It's a possibility. There's a few things I have questions about, and we could really get into that. It has to really deal with the CIA and with Cuba. It has to do with so many different factors. So right now, everything's an open book. I really can't tell you.
Well, let's get right on into it. Everybody seems to gloss over the day. Everybody wants to look at the film, and we're going to look at that here in a minute. But people, what you don't realize, unless you've been following this for forever and understand the details, but the reason RFK, I keep wanting to say RFK because he's part of our daily life now, but JFK was there because he was trying to help unify the party ahead of the 64 election. Texas was a key state, and JFK needed the votes. I mean, let's not forget, he became president because of dead men voting at Chicago, you know, so he was kicking off, and that's a conspiracy itself, you know, he was kicking off a 2-day, 5-city Texas swing to rally support. He landed in Dallas at Love Field just after 11:30 a.m., and he and Jackie stepped off Air Force One. The crowd was fired up as they all were, probably more so back then than they are today at times. You know, a typical shaking hands, waving. By 11:50 a.m., they jumped into the death machine, the open-top Lincoln Continental. JFK, Jackie in the back, as we know. And for those of you who may not be aware, yes, there was somebody else in there who got shot. Governor Connally and his wife, Nellie, were up front. It was a motorcade to a trademark luncheon, top down to charm the locals. And obviously that luncheon got canceled. So I want to start off, gentlemen, with the video here. And we'll watch it through, and then we'll ask Adam for his comments. And this has been actually cleaned up. And there we go. Look at him at the bottom. And bam, bullet number one. Whoa. There you go. Now, I said bullet number one. You know, I've never so I don't even know how many bullets. We're going to talk about that. But real quick, Adam, why was she crawling on the back of the trunk? And what are your thoughts about the video when you see it?
Well, there's a Pooter video. One, it was edited. And Time Life owns the actual Zapruder film.
And, oh, wow.
And when they were trying to maybe restore it or make a copy, they ruined a section of it. So if you see the original section, you see the cop car coming around onto Elm Street, and then you see an edit, and then you see it fast forward a little bit more. So there's that aspect of it. But there's a few things that to see. You see him hunched over and his head down after he got shot either in the back, through the neck, or in the front. We don't know yet. And his head was tilted this way to the left.
Is that a shot right there?
Yeah. And then you see his head go back. and you see the splatter either from the front or the back. We don't know, but it goes upward. And a lot of people see the driver pull a gun and shoot him. And I'm like, no, that's the passenger's hairdo with the light shining down. But what she's doing, but with Jackie, she's either picking up skull or possibly the brain.
That's holy mackerel. Do you think she had enough, watching your husband, I would assume she was kind of in shock. So you think she was actually doing that just out of shock, trying to recover, just not knowing what she was doing? Or do you think she knew what she was doing?
I think she knew what she was doing. She's very poised. She was, even though she's a very sweet lady, she was a very intelligent lady. So that's why I think she wanted to grab everything as possible, possibly for evidence or because it's her husband and she wanted to keep everything intact. So
that's wow. That's what about you, G? What do you think in regards to what Adam said?
Yeah. I mean, I believe that's true that maybe not so the evidence, but you know, if there's a hope of anyone living, you need the top of their skull. Wow. And I mean, obviously I've never been in that situation, but that split second, I would imagine if you see someone's top of their head go off, you think you're going to grab it because you're going to need that. So, and I believe she did say it in a later interview that she was just trying to go for that.
Wow.
Just to grab those pieces. So,
okay, so talk to me, Adam, about Governor Conley. I mean, so we see, and the whole focus, in fact, watching the leader, the whole focus was watching JFK. So how does he fit in here in terms of the shooting?
Well, I heard he's either 6'2 or 6'4, so he's a big guy.
Is he in this video here, guys?
Yeah, he is.
I mean, it's just our focus is so much on okay, he's right there. Okay, he's one.
And he will never believe in the miracle shot ever. He does not believe that one bit. Same with LBJ. But as far as him and his wounds, that's where it gets interesting when you look at the forensics of all, everything in the, and what G was talking about was that one shot. I think, was it a digital picture you were talking about earlier?
Oh, this picture, let me see here. This is, let me share this. I'm so accustomed to uploading everything. Give me 1 second here.
This is the picture from the JFK movie.
Okay.
It was in the courtroom, right, where they showed the magic bullet and how it would have to navigate in order to create the wounds on the people. Yeah.
Is that what you're referring to? All right, talk us through this. This is what you're talking about. Conley will never believe in the magic bullet, right?
Yeah. And LBJ even said that he can't believe that either. Because it went through the back into his throat. Then it would have to go downward, then around. And I don't know how physics could even play a part of this. I mean, it just seems ridiculous. And so with G, he said that there's going to be a perfect line. And there was a sharpshooter, a firearms expert named Haig, and he actually showed how the miracle shot can happen. And it had to do with how he was positioned. And Connelly would have been like this, with his arm down and him to his side, because the shot came right below his armpit area. And that's when it struck his arm. But then it could have got his leg right here. So it is possible.
And I was about to say, Adam, I do know this. I've read cases where you're like, and we've all seen the TV shows, but I have read cases where, you know, the bullet hits a piece of bone and begins a ricochet process. Is that a possibility here from what the experts have said?
With this bullet, the 6.5 millimeter, with that gun, it is plausible only because it's a very temperamental gun, and it wasn't a very good gun. They would say it's not for war, it's for play. So,
gotcha.
And this bullet's about, 2-3 inches long, and it spirals. So
When
it spirals, it could do numerous different things. So we'll talk about how it could enter the brain, go from the front, or blow up in the back, and be an entry wound as well. But going back to Connolly, yeah, I think that with this bullet, it probably is going to be perfectly straight and wouldn't go zigzag and all over the place, because I've never really heard that with a bullet. It could be like a pool, playing pool and hitting the ball and it bounces off. That, yes, but doing that picture, no.
So this is the straight shot. I don't know if you call it theory or whatnot, but this seems to me to be pretty straightforward here. This is what Connolly believes happened, huh?
So no, this is what. I requested this picture be shown because I went to the Henry Ford Museum where the limo is right now, and they have several presidential limos, the JFK limos there, and. So it kind of shoots. This is what made me think that, okay, maybe there were not two shooters, right? Maybe there was one shooter. That doesn't mean he was working alone, but maybe there was just one shooter. And the reason why is because the first picture that we saw, we had the two guys sitting straight in front of each other. And so when you have a bullet coming from the right and exiting towards the left, you have a trajectory that's going a certain way, right? So from the way you're looking at this picture, it would be going from the bottom towards the top. In JFK,
gotcha.
And then from Governor Connolly's point of view, also from the bottom towards the top, right? But if they're sitting in front of each other, now that bullet has to do these really weird, you know, in the air acrobatics in order to maintain that parallel trajectory. But all of that solved when you look at the limo and you see that they're not sitting in front of each other. Governor Connolly is sitting actually, as you can see here, a little further towards the top of this image. And all of a sudden, that crooked line becomes straight. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. That makes a lot more sense because both of those injuries are parallel. So that means two shooters would have to be literally maybe right next to each other shooting from the same window, or they're Governor Connolly's towards JFK's left, and this is one bullet going through, right? So that's what made me think, okay, well, maybe there was one shooter, but who was Oswald working with? And that's where I kind of changed my mind a little bit here.
So, Adam, what do you think about what G's stating there?
It's plausible, but remember, he's 6'2", 6'3", and a big guy. And there was this one person. He was Janet Reno's assistant AG. His name just escapes me for right now, but he paid his own money to look into this. And that's why in 1994, Janet Reno opened up JFK files again. And it was because of this guy. And so in 2001, he paid a lot of money to have it reconstructed digitally in 3D. And so they took every single aspect of the car, the size of each person, where they were placed, and they looked at the Zapruder video, and they were able to reconstruct it. And they said because of his size, he would have had to sit more in the middle of the car to be shot at the underneath his armpit. And so that's why I'm not saying this is incorrect, but there's another source saying that it can't be plausible.
Gotcha. Gee, he's saying you're incorrect. Okay, so we saw what Jackie was doing. Two questions here. In doing my research for this, people kept talking about the Secret Service man was waved away from the car, and there's some shots of that. But also, what was Connolly's wife doing? We saw what Jackie did. I assume she was trying to cover her husband or grab him, or what was her – I mean, not her role, but what was her reaction?
Which person?
Connolly's wife, and then the Secret Service man who they say was being waved away.
Actually, that's a good question because everyone's focus is on the Secret Service guy who jumps on the trunk. I'm sorry, the back. Yeah, the trunk. We have Jackie, we have JFK, we have the governor, we have the driver. And I don't think anyone really realized that Nellie's even in the car, but I know she is. I don't know what her reaction is.
I think pure chaos and probably didn't know what to do.
Gotcha. So just typical. There's nothing typical about it, but expected, you know, she's wondering what the hell's happening. What about the Secret Service agent to the right of the car and up a little ahead? He said that was waved off.
You know what? I haven't really thought much about that. I was so focused in on the forensic aspect. I'm not really thinking about the Secret Service at this time. But knowing any type of person who's trying to protect, their first instinct would try to probably go ahead and get out of there as fast as possible. Which brings me to the first shot was right when it turned onto Elm Street. 5 seconds later was the second shot. And then roughly between 1 to 2 seconds after that was the third shot. And there was three shots. So why didn't they go faster? Why didn't, after they heard the first shot, why didn't they go?
I don't know. I mean, I'm still stuck on the agent. I thought he was trying to get out of the way. He knew that bullet was coming. I'm trying to talk about the conspiracy here.
I will tell you, and when you asked me about the agent, I thought you were referring to the black and white video back at the airport 30 minutes earlier. And there
No. This one here is right as he's getting shot, or right before he gets shot. It's like, again, doing my research, I just ran across a lot of information, and that will come by, because I'm a sarcastic ex-sailor, so my first thought, God, trying to avoid getting shot, here's what's happening.
Well, this video, and there is video of it, I'm sure you don't have that queued up, but it was typical for several Secret Service agents to run alongside the car, which is, again, exactly, like Adam just said, not going very fast. And this guy started to run alongside the car back at the airport. And he was going to do whatever that was, a 6-mile jog all the way to the trademark at 5 miles an hour. And one of the other Secret Service agents waves him off, says, don't do that. And you see it on the video. He turns around and he throws his hands up in the air like, what the heck, or WTF, like that's what he did, and then he walked off and joined other car. So that doesn't mean all the Secret Service agents knew what was going on, but they're just following orders. Hey, don't have anyone next to the car.
Gotcha.
So someone gave an order.
So, Adam, before you get to us as to why they didn't speed up, why is there a theory? Is it because I thought you said toupee or something like that. Why do some people say it was a driver? Because I ran across a lot of that. See, y'all can't see the video right in front of you. The driver shot it. You know what?
I hear it all the time, and I said, look at the passenger's hairdo. Just focus in on the passenger, and look at his hair. And then right when you see, it looks like the driver's going to shoot JFK. It's the passenger's hairdo, and it's the sun and the light reflection.
I don't know where it's at. Where is that?
Yeah, you have to go back right around there. Yep.
Oh, you're right. I did see some video that was focusing on him, but I didn't know if that was copyrighted, so I didn't grab it. My bus, fellas. Gotcha. But you're saying it was his hair, and it just part of the way the camera angle caught it. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, so why didn't they speed away? I mean, were they trying to keep up with the people running next to the car? I mean, just used to see that.
Well, a lot of people thought there were firecrackers going on. So, but if you noticed, Abraham Zapruder never stopped filming. He kept on going. And my instinct would be duck and cover. I'm not going to do this. But, again, he was on a perch.
Well, hold on. Are you saying that in the vein that he may have been involved and this was?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
But my instinct would, I'm going to be done filming. I'm not going to film this. So I don't know what was going through his mind at that time, but he kept on filming. And you see a lot of people duck.
That's what I'm trying to say. It's human instinct. You're feeling, you're going to duck, or at least that camera's going to move, but that camera did not budge. That in and of itself just seems odd in terms of human reaction. You think he just didn't hear the shots?
Oh, he would have. But the thing is, he's right next, or he's actually on the grassy knoll, the North Grassy Knoll. And so now we could talk about a possible shooter behind the fence on the grassy knoll. If there was a shooter there, he would have heard that, because he would have been probably about, what, 10, 15 feet away from the shooter. And so that's where it's like, okay, no one could be behind. But that's the thing. It's who were the witnesses and what did they hear? One woman, she was on the fourth floor in the where Oswald was. And when she heard the shots, she said, oh, that sounds like the record room, which is the sixth floor. So she puts the shooter where Oswald's at. But then everyone that was in the grass, they didn't know where the shots were coming from because it was just an echo chamber. So sounds were just bouncing off walls.
Gotcha. So why didn't the car speed up?
Good question. No one knows. I mean, again, a lot of people thought it was firecrackers.
I will add on to one thing Adam just said. There was, I think, 90% of the ear witnesses heard three shots. And, you know, some, I think it was 5% heard four and 5% heard five or something like that. One person heard the when you cock the gun. One person heard that. It was the guy in the fifth story window right below Oswald. And he said heard the bullets hit the ground. So not only did he hear the cock, he heard the shot, and then he heard the little ping, right, when it hits the ground. So that's an important clue right there.
I'll say. So we hear all this. So the limo, I guess I wrongly put it in my notes, the limo sped away. Obviously, it did not speed away, you know. But it ended up at Parkland Memorial Hospital, which was 4 miles away. It arrived there right at about 12:36 p.m. Doctors rushed Kennedy to trauma room one, but the head wound was catastrophic. You know, brain tissue was gone, and he wasn't breathing on his own. They cut open his throat for tracheotomy, and they pumped his chest, but it was hopeless. I mean, my take is by the time they rolled him in, to me it sounds like the doctors were like, okay, we'll go through the motions of this dude's toast. I mean, just looking at that head, I mean, I'm not trying to sound jokingly or anything, but it just seems like, I mean, half his brain's gone and his skull's out, and with the technology of that era, I mean, what were they actually hoping to do there, Adam?
Oh, there's a big documentary, and they went to the Parkland doctors who are still alive, and this was probably about 2012. And because it was the president, it didn't matter. They had to try to help him out. It wasn't about, oh, this guy's a goner. They tried so hard to bring him back to life. Dr. McClellan, he was 30 at the time. And when he saw him, his whole back of his head, big hole, this big. And there was one bullet wound that he said was an entry wound, and it was about right here on his head. And he was looking, and he could see the back of the skull.
And well, they caught him dead at 1 p.m., Dr. Malcolm Perry. Adam, what about the doctors? I mean, there's so many theories about, you know, how he was shot, et cetera, et cetera. Wouldn't the doctors have been able to tell, like, hey, this is where the bullet went in or how it entered? And from there, piecing it together with the film, we get all these. What about that thought process?
Well, McCollum, he actually thought the grassy knoll. And he said that the entry wound actually was in the front and came back and exploded in the back. And that's what he thought. Every doctor that was on that, who was still alive, all thought the same thing.
So, okay, so if they all thought that, before we move on, then how did all this confusion happen with the magic bullet, the string, I mean, all this stuff that everybody talks about? If the doctors, if they all agreed on that, it would seem that's pretty open and shut.
That would be the third bullet, right, Adam? The second bullet, which was the magic bullet.
Correct, the third bullet. The first bullet was supposed to be a miss and hit concrete, and the one bystander by the overpass got hit with shrapnel and was bleeding from it, but that's another story.
And then, pronounced dead at 1 p.m., by 2 p.m., his body was loaded into a casket already, hustled on an Air Force One. Jackie, being the dutiful wife, as I hope my wife would do, refused to leave the side, and took off for D.C., and where they set up for an autopsy. And Lyndon Johnson was sworn in as president with Jackie standing by days. Any comments or thoughts on that in terms of the autopsy or because we're going to get into the what's been released. Any final thoughts on the day of they're at it?
Well, yeah, there's possibilities of three shooters, by the way. And by the way, the windshield did have a hole in it right by the rear view mirror right off to the left. And that is a perfect trajectory to his head.
Gee, any thoughts? You, Mr. Oliver Stone fame?
Well, in terms of LBJ, what I thought it was really interesting and very suspicious is, and actually very cruel, he wanted Jackie to stand right by him on Air Force One while he was sworn in as president.
Oh, that's to give legitimacy to him.
Legitimacy, and then she was still there with JFK's blood on her dress. I mean, just terrible. And then I can't remember if it's video or a picture, but LBJ winks at one of his aides right after he's sworn in, like, hey, man, this is awesome type of wink. At least that's how I interpreted it. So not saying that he was a part of it, but maybe that's something he was tipped off to, like, hey, just be ready, just in case you need to take over.
You know, I got to be honest. I've researched Lyndon B. Johnson, and if there's a heaven and a hell, he's burning fiercely right now. He was a vile, evil man who did. He didn't rise to power. He destroyed people to take power. So any conspiracy theory, if there's any truth to it, because I don't know, but if there's any truth to it, my money would be that he at least knew it if wasn't directly involved in it. If I remember correctly, and this was years ago, I believe he was part of fixing one of his elections or securing his win or something to that effect. Any thoughts? Well, real quick, either one, G or Adam, I did discover a little tidbit on Conley. Adam, why don't you inform the audience here? What Conley gave us, the American people, down the road afterwards?
And Herbert Walker.
Yeah, exactly. He George H. Bush was soundly defeated in his Senate run because he was a congressman, and his career was pretty much over. But Conley was able to resuscitate it, salvage it, and bring him back, and we got the Bush dynasty. Any thoughts on that, G-Man?
For better or for worse, I suppose. I mean, if you think about it, George W. Bush did a lot of great things. Actually, so did H.W. Bush. But the one big failing of George W. Bush is he gave us Obama. We're not supposed to be political here, but obviously I'm one of the co-hosts of Fired Up, a conservative talk show. So, that's my view on things.
And George H to me was, we had magic with Reagan for 8 years, and George H, as soon as he got elected, that's when the whole magic of being conservatism and everything that came with it was done, because he was part of the, what I call, establishment. And for the record, all my podcasts are political, meaning I talk about culture and as Andrew, I don't know if you're familiar with Andrew Breitbart, Adam, but as we all know, Andrew Breitbart said, politics is downstream of culture. And that was my whole purpose of starting this podcast. And I also have a sports podcast because of, I mean, it goes back to Jackie Robinson, but Colin Kaepernick made politics part of everyday sports. So I think politics is now intertwined in everything. And even this has become political. My producer there, my partner, Big John, he's like, well, why don't you do this? I'm fired up. Because obviously with Trump releasing that, that's all the political aficionados are. And my take was like, hey, this has been a conspiracy theory for right or wrong in terms of using that word. So I wanted it on this podcast. All right. So, Adam, before the actual release of these 80,000 files, did you ever think they'd be released?
Well, there have been several releases. One was in 2018. The other was in the 90s. But to have this dump, no, I never thought. And, I mean, the redactions, I mean, with Israel, and everyone's like, oh, Israel did it, Israel did it. And I'm thinking, no, I don't think so. But, I mean, that's why it was crossed out for a reason. Because it's going to get conspiracy theorists like me to go down that rabbit hole.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, with social media now, it's gone crazy. With at Reddit, you'll find every theory, some claiming a coordinated plot involving anti-Castro groups, and we're going to talk about that, distrust in the official narrative. I think, did Mark Lane, I can't remember who wrote the book, or maybe it was that, yeah, I can't remember. I'm not going to waste time thinking about that. So let's talk about the first file tie-in. The psychological stress evaluator, that seems to be a fueling a lot of talk on the internet. You want to tell us a little bit about that, Adam?
Repeat the question, please.
Okay, so file tie-in is what I called it, the psychological stress evaluator. It's tied to one of the files that was released, and it reveals psychological stress evaluator tests and voice stress analysis on key figures like Earl Warren, showing stress on certain phrases like no evidence. And it's being interpreted kind of like a lie detector in regards to this conspiracy theorists. And my question, I guess, is what does that mean? What are they saying, these conspiracy theorists, with that?
You know what?
What they're saying is it showed the PSE was used on the 1972 recordings of Warren and others, and it showed a 90. This isn't me. This is what my research said. Yeah. Showed a 94% chance at least one of eight insiders, like the Dallas cops and commission members, were being deceptive, directly challenging the Warren report's no conspiracy claim.
You know, I don't give too much weight on that. It's pseudoscience for me, and I think, because my wife has that barometer on me, I'm like, no, you're wrong. I'm not like that. I'm not angry. Trust me, I'm not angry. Now I'm mad.
Okay, so we'll move on from that. I look at it this way. They're wrong, and to me, I don't know. I guess pseudoscience is the best word, because what one person hears, the other may not hear anything. It's just it's more opinion. Gee, your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the lie detector test, right? You have to get a baseline for a person. And so, like me, if you put me one-on-one and you strap me up, I'm more of an anxious type, right? I get a little anxious because normally I'm really chill. You put me in a situation like that, that's new. And then, you know, they're going to say I'm a liar and I murdered all these people. But you got to get a baseline and go, okay, this guy's just jumpy. And so we got to, you know, if he's telling a lie, he's going to deviate from that. So this PSE, I think it's something similar. Like, I don't think there's any baseline. And, you know, if all these people have stress, I mean, they're giving interviews, right? So there's going to be some stress. But on top of that, like, if there is a conspiracy, it's going to be very small. It's going to be Oswald and maybe two other people out there, like one guy from the CIA, one guy from, you know, the Fidel Castro group or whatever, all working together to get rid of JFK or whatever the case is, right? That it's not going to be that 50 different people are in on it, because at least one of those guys is going to become a millionaire writing a book. And a lot of people who are not involved have gotten rich writing right. books. So.
Right. Okay. Well, Adam, feel free to jump in with whatever. I put this in what I view as an orderly fashion, but you're the expert, so feel free to chime in with something else or if it's related. So then we move on to obviously there's a lot of CIA conspiracy theories, and I guess there's a lot of the CIA opening a file on Oswald in 1959, 4 years before Dallas, tracking his Soviet defection and his Swiss stopover, and that's fueling people saying they knew too much, they knew more than they're telling us. Thoughts on that, Adam?
Oh, there's so much to go down that rabbit hole. But, okay, let's talk about the CIA. They were already following him for 4 years. And so let's get to 9 weeks before the assassination. So they knew he was in Dallas. He met up with this one person, Oswald did, and his name was El Mexicano. And together, they went down to Mexico to the Soviet Union consulate.
Right.
And they met up with this person named, trying to remember.
Kostakova.
Okay.
Valery Kostakova. Okay.
Yeah.
How did you pronounce it?
Kostakova. And literally, he was a KGB assassin. But also El Mexicano was arrested for trying to assassinate somebody as well. So the theory that, and by the way, going back to the war mission, J. Edgar Hoover said he only went down to Mexico alone, which we now know that it was a complete lie. So, and by the way, the CIA did give this information to the FBI, and the FBI didn't do anything with this information. So they did know, but Hoover lied to the Warren Commission. So now that becomes that whole single bullet theory that came part of that. So anyway, so when Oswald was down in Mexico, he could have had training on how to fire a rifle, because the CIA earlier said that he was a really bad shot when he was over in Soviet Union. So, so fast forward, they knew he was in Dallas. They knew that he had, ties with Soviet Russia. And so they knew something was brewing. And so they didn't do anything other than send it off to the FBI, and the FBI just threw all the information away. They didn't.
I'm sorry, Adam. Keep going.
So basically, going to now the FBI, mobsters in Miami got picked up, and they even told the FBI that something's going to go down in Dallas. This was a day or two prior to the shooting. So the FBI had all this information, and they did nothing about it.
Yeah, you know, it's in my research, I did come across that the CIA, that the FBI had a lot of information that came out afterwards. But real quick, we do have some comments, and I did not see them, so I apologize. Let's give Back to the Stone Age's due. One of the reasons JFK was even in Dallas that day was because he was falling behind to Goldwater, Texas. That's correct, Back to the Stone Age. That he was there to shore up his support, show up the party support, etc. So LBJ convinced him to show up to campaign. LBJ, hey, I need you to go down there. Where's Oswald? because he wanted to, and I'm not sure what he means by he wanted to interact with the crowd. You know, that's something that today we find odd, but not back then. And the doctors did piece it together and included it on the autopsy report. Okay, that's about the bullet. And he agrees, Backstone Age agrees with you, G. That's about as useful as a polygraph. In other words, not much. I apologize, Back to the Stone Age. I need to keep a better eye on the comments. For some reason, I never do that. Okay, so So it shows in essence that the, in my notes, Adam, it seemed like the FBI kind of knew more than the CIA. You know, it includes members from the FBI's Paris office, this dump, to the director showing early international tracking of Oswald, previously heavily redacted, until the review board pushed for the full disclosure. So it shows the FBI was on him since 1959. So you said the CIA, so why would some people think the FBI, because when I was doing my research, I got the impression that either the CIA purposely ignored it, didn't want to deal with it, you know, maybe they were in on it, was as some conspiracy theorists say, but the FBI was tracking them, but they did nothing with it. What's the real issue, the truth here, or as close as we can get to it?
I think the FBI was just incompetent. I think the CIA knew much more than the FBI. The FBI just didn't do anything. And
it makes sense overseas, though. That's the CIA's domain, correct?
That's all CIA. But yeah. The FBI is domestic. So
exactly.
And so what was it? The someone from the England, someone in England went to the U.S. embassy and said, something's going to happen in Dallas. And so they sent that to the FBI. And also one other place, and I'm trying to remember, but there's multiple places that gave information and sent it to the FBI beforehand. And I think it was the day of, November 22nd.
Gotcha. So, but you know, what is clear to me is they knew of Oswald and nobody did anything, which leads to people thinking, well, that's because Oswald was either the shooter or the shooter slash patsy. So people who believe that, it sounds to me like there's some legitimacy in that. What are your thoughts?
Oh, we could get to Jack Ruby because, I mean, he, according to this one woman, she was a burlesque dancer. And
there's always one of those involved.
Her name was Beverly Oliver. And she went to Jack Ruby's club because Jack actually treated her very nicely. And she was there and he introduced her to Oswald and said, this is a CIA officer or agent. And she didn't think much of it. But then a few days later, she was back in Ruby's club and a person by the name of Wally Weston, he was a comedian. And he basically in the mic said, you're a damn communist. And he didn't say damn. He said something else and went and smacked him or punched him right in the face. And she was witness to all of this. And so, yeah, basically Ruby knew Oswald and basically said he was part of the CIA.
Wow. Okay. So and that makes sense. I was heading to New Orleans there, yeah, beat me to it, which makes me feel good about my research. I'm on the right track. Yeah.
Well, let me just jump in real quick before you move on to New Orleans. So I was watching this documentary called Turning Point Cold War, which is on Netflix, and they talked about a lot in the late 40s, 50s, and 60s, the CIA would place agents behind the Iron Wall, right, and basically the Soviet Union. And a lot of these guys would get captured and hung out to dry. I mean, they were just basically expendable assets. Yeah. So assuming that Oswald was maybe, hey, we got a guy there, or maybe it's someone that we could say, hey, if we give you this kind of money, will you carry this out for us? So maybe he wasn't officially CIA, but maybe he was an asset. It would make sense that he'd be a patsy. Now, he was the killer, in my opinion. But then he would be the one set up to be the lone gunman, and he wasn't working with anyone, and he's just crazy. That could be true, but I can see the CIA saying, okay, a couple guys, make sure that, you know, when we need him, he's ready to go.
Gotcha. No, I saw that documentary too, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Show. Or was it Shooter? They made Marky Mark the Fall Guy. You know, I'm just poking fun. That's all. It's just because Hollywood. It's just so many. I mean, if there's an up and coming movie director from 60, you know, a few years after this happened, there's like 10 zillion movie angles here. Speaking of angles, let's move on to the KGB angle. how that's playing in terms of his Soviet connections. You kind of told us quite a bit, but there was a KGB defector, Yuri Nosenko, and I think he had a hand in trying to tell us some stuff. But again, this is so overwhelming. Talk to us, Adam, about the Soviet angle here. You have touched on it.
Well, he went to Soviet Russia. Oswald did. He married a Russian, and you could see all the ties that he had to communism. And so he was there for quite a while, and then he moved back. And so I don't know how in depth he was with the KGB, but I know that he really wanted to do something. Do something negative, because he was a communist, in my opinion.
Well, in his mind, it wasn't negative, was it?
It was positive to be a communist.
So let me ask you this: what are your thoughts of those who believe he was a Soviet plant?
There is a good opportunity for him to be one, but the thing is, when he went down to Mexico, he was, according to one source, he was trying to get back to the USSR, and they wouldn't let him.
Interesting. And you know what?
His plan B was to go to Cuba, I think, as well. So if he couldn't get back to the Soviet Union, Cuba was his second destination.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Okay. You know, I kept running across his diary, and I assume that's Oswald's diary. Am I reading that wrong? And he had a diary, Adam?
You're thinking of Griswold, the movie Vacation. He had a diary. Bad joke. Sorry. I had to go there.
No, I'm saying Griswold has Family Vacation.
Griswold, Oswald.
Chevy Chase did play the patsy in many of those scenes.
but I haven't read his diary, so I really can't comment on it.
Okay, so gee, before we move on here, you know, guys, there's so much information. We're just kind of touching on it and getting Adam's points. But we could be here 4 hours and still just get through a third of, or not even that, by 10-15%. So I apologize if you feel I'm glossing over. Feel free to stop me, Adam, if there's an important point.
Oh, yeah, we're going to talk about the autopsy and that conspiracy as well. But let's talk Cuba right now, because I think KGB has been fine. I think I explored everything, sorry. But Cuba, there was a ex-CIA in 2018, and he got the release, the 2000 files then, and he saw that there must be something going on with Cuba after the Mexicano spy from Cuba. So he met up with a Cuban, their version of the FBI. And he said that, there was a big presence during November 22nd, because they would have their major radio spying technology towards Washington, D.C., and all the way down the coast. But on that day, they focused in on Dallas because they knew something bad was going to happen.
So it seems to me that everybody but JFK saw this coming. I mean, we can talk about this now or later, but I'll start with you, G, before we get into the main event. Do you think LBJ was involved?
I don't think he had plans to do this. I mean, you know, as a small-time politician that I am, like, I'm very careful of, you know, what I do, because, you know, you just don't want things to come back on you, and obviously everything's always taken out of context. If you do one thing, everyone takes it 5 different ways. So I could see him thinking, okay, whatever's going to happen, don't let me know anything. Like, you know, don't give me a hint, but maybe he had a clue that I know the military wasn't happy with Kennedy. They felt like the Cuban Missile Crisis, we backed down. The Bay of Pigs was a complete failure, and that was Kennedy's fault. and Kennedy was weak. I know that there was a lot of, you know, you remember just 3 years earlier, Eisenhower was talking about, you know, beware the military-industrial complex. Okay. And it was that that whole group that was pushing Kennedy to World War III. So do I think the Soviets, you know, the last topic that you were talking about, had anything to do with it? No, I don't think so. I mean, you kill the leader of America, that is, I mean, you got nukes coming your way, unfortunately. So I don't think they would be involved, and there's nothing to be gained from that. In fact, Kennedy gave Khrushchev an out, right? He said, right, okay, you'll save face, but Khrushchev was deposed anyways. I believe it was before this the assassination. So, yeah.
Gotcha. No, I get that. Adam, before I get to you, it was Clay Shaw's diary, I think, is what I was thinking of.
Okay.
Running across that.
Real quick about LBJ, there's an audio that just came out during the dump, and and you said how weird he was around Jackie O. Well, and this was just a month later during Christmas time, and he said, "I need to spank you for not saying goodbye to me."
Well, that sounds like typical LBJ, based on my research. I can actually picture that man saying that. So let's get to the mob part before we're everywhere here on here, but I'm looking over my notes. And we got a question here from Back to Stone Age. Also, the mob hated the Kennedy brothers.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's the husbands of all the brothers. JFK was Benny. So Back to the Stone Age, he sounds like he's 80 years old. All the brothers, you know. Your thoughts, Adam? First of all, didn't the mob, weren't they the ones with the Cuba ties?
Oh, absolutely. But look at Jack Rubenstein, or Jack Ruby. He was part of the mob.
And no, hold on. You said Rubenstein. So
that's his name.
So you agree with the Israel tie-in there? I'm kidding.
I just wanted to give clarification, Rubenstein, okay?
I'm kidding. Talk to us about the mob and then the castle tie-in, and answer this portion of it. Do you think Fidel knew, or just the Soviets were being clandestine because Cuba was an operating base for them?
Well, if Oswald did have ties to communism, there's a good chance he did tell everybody when he went down to Mexico his plans. So why wouldn't the USSR tell Cuba? And I think there's a good possibility of that happening.
Interesting. Okay, so the Warren Report. When you saw that, or I'm sure you probably read through it, or if not all of it, big chunks of it, Adam, the perception is it was a joke.
It was a joke.
Over up from the get-go. What makes you so for the audience out there, people like me that aren't quite aware, what made it a joke?
Well, they would not really listen to a lot of the experts. They gave very little time to the Parkland doctors, and they wanted to rely on the autopsy. And there's a lot of problems with the autopsy. I mean, there's so many people that said that it's a sham. But it's also the conspiracy of leading up to the autopsy. He landed, or the plane landed, and one, the casket was a different color when it dropped. The person that put JFK in the casket did not have a body bag. But when it landed there, the person that took JFK out, there was a body bag. And also, at the time, I think the autopsy started at 8 o'clock, there was two different reports of when the casket got there. And it was a 10-minute difference. And that was roughly around 6:50 to 7 o'clock. So there was an hour to play as well. And the Parkland doctors said that his skull was just out, the brains were falling out, the cerebellum was just dangling. And then when you see pictures of the actual autopsy, his scalp was pulled back, and they said that there was a small little shot right here, not his whole cavity blown out. And so there's a lot of different problems. Also, the autopsy said that there was a bullet hole right here, or not a bullet hole, but a tracheotomy. Well, no, the Parkland doctors saw that there was a bullet hole, and that's the perfect place to put a tracheotomy. So that's where they just made it wider so they could put the tube down. So the people at what Bethesda Naval Academy, they had no clue that that was a bullet hole.
Oh, wow.
And but then finally they said, let's call Parkland Hospital and talk about if they know the bullet hole in the back. And Parkland doctors like, we didn't know, but they shared information about the tracheotomy being a bullet hole. But here's the crazy part, is the people that did the autopsy. There was two main doctors. They've never done an autopsy like this ever. They weren't even a specialist in this field.
Oh, that's right. I remember reading that. Why was that?
Good question. Why would the government want people that doesn't know how to do an autopsy do this? One conspiracy is they want one goal, and that's a special outcome. Yep. And not the full truth.
That's actually, to me, this is illogical. Why have it when you really want the truth to come out? Real quick, a comment here back to the Stone Age. Castro was definitely pissed, especially after Operation Mongoose. And for those who may not know, Operation Mongoose was the CIA's attempt to try to take Castro out. You know, they wanted to keep the Batista regime in. And, I mean, you know, we went from one corrupt with the Batistas to an even worse guy with Castro, you know. So before we move on to some of the more outrageous, or what seemed outrageous to me when I came across, out of the 80,000 documents, I'm assuming you read them all here in a few hours before coming on, Adam.
Oh, yeah, I read every single one.
So, but out of the 80,000 drop, is there anything, though, based on what you saw out there that kind of struck a chord with you? Or is this just more, it's like there's nothing there. That's going to sit there.
Oh, I need to talk about Agent Uphill. I know G's read it because he's been reading everything I've been writing. So Agent Uphill was from the CIA, and on November 23rd, he was very nervous, very anxious, and he went to a friend's house in New Jersey, and he told him that it was a group of CIA agents that killed JFK.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah. Okay, I'm on board. I see it.
And then less than 6 months later, he gets a possible suicide, or it was a suicide. And he's right-handed, but he shot himself with his left hand behind his ear. Hello, McFly. So with that being said, it really points to the CIA. But here's now a crazy part. So during the Bay of Pigs, the CIA director, his name was Alan Dulles. Well, after the Bay of Pigs, he got fired. Well, guess who he was, or guess who asked him to be part of the, or guess who asked to be part of the Warren Commission? Alan Dulles.
Didn't he supposedly jump out of a hospital room?
I didn't hear that, but
I think one of those CIA guys. That I'm crossing over with the UFO stuff, but I thought it was Alan Dulles who did that. Okay, so what's your take on that CIA? When I read that, you know, I got to be honest, it's my world is from Panama, so all my research is how powerful the military intelligence was, and then they got into a war with the CIA, and obviously the CIA won that war. But what I came across from that is the CIA has been around since day one to create chaos and topple regimes. So when I hear this about that guy in New Jersey, to me, if I were to believe this, because I don't know, but I'm like, there's, you know, that to me would be part of the validation. See what happened to that guy? How heavy do you, I guess what I'm asking is, out of all of this, what do you find to be, and I'm not asking you to say you believe this is what happened, but what would you say out of all this stuff, conspiracy stuff, is the most plausible? you know, that the CIA did it, that it was a mob, that it was one of the, as Spector Sonic said, one of the husbands of one of the broads he was sleeping with. What to you sounds the most logical?
Well, I do want to talk about Kevin Shipp. He was an ex-CIA, and he was a whistleblower because the CIA tried to kill him and his family. And he was around the CIA back in the mid-80s. He puts blame of Iran-Contra on Herbert Walker Bush and also on Bill Clinton. Because remember, Herbert Walker was ex-CIA director in the 70s. And by the way, he was in Dallas November 22nd during the assassination. There's pictures of him at the scene. Anyway.
Hold on. What was his role in politics or the government at that time? Congressman?
He was a businessman, but there's a guy by the name of George Bush that was in the CIA at the same time, but the CIA said, no, that's a different George Bush. So, lost my train of thought. Kevin Shipp. So he really thinks that the CIA was heavily involved because he does not trust the CIA at all, rightfully so. And he talks about 9/11 in depth with another ex-CIA agent who was the whistleblower on waterboarding. So he really has nothing nice to say about the CIA. So I think it's completely plausible that the CIA, with the witness Beverly Oliver, who was at Jack Ruby's club, saying that Oswald was CIA. And literally, if the CIA really wanted someone to kill JFK, that would have been the opportune time.
Okay, Do you think they wanted to kill him because, first of all, it's a double-edged question. First of all, was it true that JFK wanted to dismantle the CIA? And do you think that's, if the CIA was involved, it was because of that?
Well, that's, JFK wanted to dismantle the CIA. Basically, he said that they have too much autonomy and he wants to break it up. And he fired Alan Dulles. So with that being said, yeah, there's a major motive for the CIA to kill JFK.
And, so Kevin Shipp then. I keep interrupting you. Was there anything else on him?
He really didn't elaborate it because a lot of stuff he can't really expound on because he's ex-CIA. But he alluded that the CIA was heavily involved.
And it sounds like you kind of agree with that.
I used to. I used to. I went down the rabbit hole like G did. And am I a recovering conspiracy theorist? No, because I think Oswald was part of the assassination, but I think there is a plausible shooter in the South Grassy Knoll, which is right by the overpass. So, because the bullet hole in the windshield, that could have caused the head to go backwards, because I've never seen a shot where from the behind and goes backwards. I've never seen that. It's just logic.
No, I agree. Last time I shot it. any comments in terms of your thought of the CIA?
Yeah, so one thing that we haven't talked about is George D. Morenschild. And he was a friend of Oswald, and he was actually a friend starting in the summer of 1962. So now you're talking a whole year earlier before the assassination. And I was watching Bill O'Reilly. He has a podcast on YouTube. And Bill O'Reilly is a very strong believer in the lone gunman theory. But he said for him, there's a possibility that there's a connection to the CIA, and it's Morenschild, and I think he's referenced in the JFK movie as well. But Morenschild was an occasional CIA field agent. So now you have a direct link from the CIA all the way to Oswald, and this is known that they were friends. So I think there is a potential connection here that, so that, you know, there's a lot of people will say, okay, Oswald got the job at the Texas School Book Depository in September, long before JFK's trip to Dallas. Okay, that's given. So he wasn't placed there on purpose, right? But at some point, he could have been tipped off, and I believe it became public knowledge 6 days before the trip, but maybe it was knowledge up to 2 to 3 weeks before the trip in tight circles that JFK is going to be coming down to Dallas. And so there's ample opportunity to say, okay, here's his parade route. Hey, we know Oswald's working in the Texas School Book Depository, and then you only need a couple people. You don't need this grand conspiracy of, like, again, like I said before, 50 people knowing and everyone's colluding with one another, because the more people know, the more, you know, your loose lips sink ships. So
right.
If you just have one or two people know, and then you talk to George de Morenschild and say, okay, let Oswald know what's going on, that's enough. Then, you know, yeah, he's a bad shot. But again, this was only like 40 to 50 yards. I mean, it wasn't that. You know, they were shooting 200 to 300 yards in the Civil War, and this is a full 100 years later. So this, even a bad shot could hit someone, you know, maybe not exactly where they want. But so I do think there is a CIA connection, and the fact that Agent Uphill said that there's a small group of disgruntled or angry CIA agents that conspired. Now, again, this was reported after the fact, right? So it was after the fact that it said that Uphill went and said this on the day of. So, but I do think that the CIA was involved. And again, the CIA was basically a World War II agency to help defeat the Nazis. And then they decided, hey, we can use this against the Soviet Union as well. And they just planted expendable agents in the field over in the Soviet Union. Many of them were captured and killed or sent to the gulags. And so Oswald would have been the same. You're an expendable asset. Do what we want. And then the mob connection, I mean, again, that if you have one or two CIA assets and they go to the mob and say, hey, we need someone to take out Oswald afterwards. And you know that big prosecution that we have on you because of the drugs or the money laundering, we'll just drop that, right? So maybe the mob was pulled in as a result of pressure.
Okay, so before we get to the mob, because I want both your thoughts on the mob, but Adam, your thoughts on what G said here in his thought process with the CIA.
I completely agree with him, 100%.
Yeah, I agree too. My take is the CIA is and Chuck Schumer actually kind of gave it away when during Trump's first term. I said, you're going after the intel community? He's like, good luck with that. You know, and that comment.
Oh, yeah.
That's a very powerful comment, you know. So let's get to the mob here. We know from the 1980s and 90s that the CIA has been involved with drugs, cartels. They made deals in a sad, pathetic way to defend them. That's part of that life. You know, you got to work with unsavory people, you know, but to see that they actually make deals that hurt Americans, that's like a big whopper to swallow. Did they have that type of relationship with the mob back then that they do now, since they've gotten bigger? Adam?
That's a good question. The mob isn't nearly as big as it was several decades ago. But let's look at what the CIA has done. I mean, they have no money from Congress because the CIA was created by Truman. So they need to get some sort of money revenue coming in. What's the best way?
USAID.
USAID. NGOs.
Yeah. So the best way is for them to leverage corporations to go do their dirty deeds overseas, illegal, whether it's gun running, the drug sale. I mean, I would imagine that's how they do it.
Oh, yeah. Fast and Furious. They were behind that. So the drug trade, but look at the CIA with Iran-Contra selling weapons. I mean, and the drugs, oh, they allow all that.
So Adam, what's the name? I don't remember the name. There's a general, highly decorated Marine, or colonel, and that's his biography, very highly decorated from like the 20s or 30s. And he came out with a book or and said, I was pretty much a goon for the government. And his job, so for example, with down in Central or Latin, Central South America, like banana fields, the big thing, when a corporation was having, like Guatemala was having trouble with the Guatemalan government, he went and handled stuff. That's kind of what you're talking about, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I mean, their whole purpose was to gather intelligence and bring it to the president. That was the whole thought process. But now what we're seeing is they could do whatever they want. According to Kevin Shipp, they lie under oath to Congress constantly, and they could get away with it. Not Comey. I'm trying to remember the ex-CIA director. But once the Senate had this top secret information on the CIA, the CIA director said, we're going to actually arrest you for having top secret classified information that you shouldn't have. And so the senators back down.
I remember that.
So there's just too much power with the CIA.
Didn't they also spy on the senators on the computers?
Yes.
About 10 years ago?
Yes, that's exactly what happened.
So, I mean, we're not experts here. How do we stop a behemoth like that? Because I got to be honest, if we can't figure out a way to stop the CIA, they're eventually, if not already, controlling presidents, kind of like Hoover did in his day, don't you think?
Oh, by far. I mean, what have we seen since 2016? And we have seen just massive, massive cover-ups, lies, and by the way, I did not vote Trump for two times. But the thing is, seeing what Biden did with his FBI agents lying about the Hunter laptop. I mean, there was already a congressional hearing 2 days before saying that, yeah, we know that the laptop's correct and it's real. And then the 51 FBI agents like, no, that's Russian disinformation.
Intel agencies. I think social media can help slow them down. I think more and more people are why people for better or worse. I mean, some people are why people for the right reasons. Some people are why people for selfish reasons. But we have mob mentality in this country now. And maybe that's what they want, you know. But I'll say this, when Obama got elected, because I always assumed Bush fell under that domain because of daddy and the way he was brought up. Mm-hmm. But I used to tell my friends back home in the South, y'all in move for a big awakening because Obama's not going to do squat to help you. Once he gets elected, he's going to fall in line because he serves the same masters that every establishment Democrat and Republican has served. And I think that's kind of what we saw, you know?
Yeah, we did. We completely did.
Okay, so the mob, though. So getting back to the mob here, because we could talk about that conspiracy type theories all night, too. Yeah. So back to the mob, then. How do you think that went down if we follow that conspiracy thread?
Well, it goes back to Jack Ruby. If Jack Ruby did know Oswald, why did he kill him? And the mob, we all know that JFK and Bobby were going after mobsters, but the thing is, their dad was a mobster too, bootlegging from Canada.
Yeah.
But so they really, I mean, going back to the election of 1960 with Sinatra and the mobsters helping, especially in Chicago, JFK, but then getting backstabbed saying, we're going to go after you. They didn't like him. Jack Ruby told Beverly Oliver that he would kill him.
Gotcha. Gee, any thoughts on the mob there?
Yeah, my understanding of the mob, and I'm not a mob expert, but they want to run their successful quote-unquote business, right? So they're not going to just be reckless in the way they conduct that. When they go out to kill people, it's going to be like a rival mob or someone who gets in the way of their operations. But their preferred method, as far as I know, is bribing, right? They want to bribe off officials and politicians and police and just let's live in peace. We'll do our thing. We're not going to hurt anyone. And here's your cut. So I don't see them playing a part, any leading part in the JFK assassination. But I do agree with Adam that it came in the second part. You can't have Oswald talk and he's expendable. So let's use, you know, the CIA is probably thinking, let's use whatever we have on the mob to force them into eliminating our CIA asset. I mean, I think that's a very plausible way of doing things. And the mob is probably like, oh, we got, I mean, if you've ever heard Jack Ruby talk, he sounds like he's, you know, one can short of a six pack. I mean, he's not the brightest guy, right? And seems very hot-headed. So it just takes a couple mob guys to go, hey, why don't you just take him out, right? Take him out. He's going to be here. We know, you know, he's coming out at this time, and he was waiting there a long time. I think Oswald was delayed at least 40 minutes because of a sweater. He needed a sweater because it was cold outside. So I believe that's where the mob comes in is, okay, let's take out Oswald so he can't talk.
Clean up crew.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's move on here to what has come about because of this release, and that's the Israel theory. I mean, so there's growing faction in turn regarding Israeli intelligence. They're saying they orchestrated a hit over JFK's opposition to their nuclear ambitions, and that's coming out from the 2025 file release. My question to you, Adam, is one, that your take on that, but two, if Israel was involved, how did you see them, or how do you think they would be involved, or you're not buying into that angle at all?
I don't, and that's why their name was covered up for so long, because I think they're an innocent party. We know that JFK did not want Israel to have atomic weapons, and it really made Israel angry, but to kill JFK over that, I mean, that's the motive. It's a weak motive. I don't buy it. So, yeah, I think very little.
Gee.
Yeah, what I see on Twitter are mostly left-wing people trying to throw this forward because, you know, of their free Palestine, pro-Hamas viewpoint. And so I don't hold any credibility in the Israel theory at all.
But it's weird.
So I want to – go ahead.
So when I'm on X and seeing everybody's like, oh, this person did it, and I'm thinking, can't you just use basic rationale, critical thinking, and just what is the motive? And people are just so quick to just judge, and I'm thinking, just think, people. Think rationally. So go ahead, sorry.
No. That's why I think the CIA was involved. I'm like, well, thinking rationally, if he wanted to dismantle the CIA, and they had their hands in everything, and it wasn't just him, he was going to use his brother as the attorney general, and that was like a 1-2 punch. I mean, had he lived, to me, there seems to be a good chance they may have made some ground on it. So my thought process is just, out of oddly as this talk, because the Oswald angles, to me, that's just part of the drama. But at the end of the day, who was pulling the strings? And it would seem that it was the CIA that was pulling the strings, especially when we talk the mob. I mean, that's just another angle in terms of somebody has to pull those strings, you know? So that's kind of how I do look at it. Adam, before we close this out, though, what have we missed that we have not talked about that you think is relevant? One, from your own experience as being the JFK sleuth here, and the 2025, your final take on that big dump release, what you really think of it? Is it a dump or a good release?
Well, I'm not going to say it's a big dump, but what I finally really do think about the release was There was some really cool, interesting items that did come out. The funniest one was JFK Jr. saying that Joe Biden's a traitor. And that should not have been part of the release because it really isn't. But if I know anything, Trump wanted that and brought a smile to my face because he has humor. I thought it was – I mean, we're not even done with going through all the different files because, I mean, it's going to take at least 2 months just to read it, and then you have to connect all the dots. And so, we're not done. I do want to say that Oswald did have a hand shooting. No question about it. But was there a second shooter? It's highly it's possible, very much so. And I don't think we'll ever find what really happened. I don't think there's enough.
I agree. Gene, before I get to you, just to push back a little bit, even the 60s was an era where people had lost the art of how to shoot. Back in the Civil War era, they could shoot. They grew up. You know, the little Joey at 5 years old was being taught by Papa or Uncle Joey or even Mama-san how to shoot. In fact, snipers first came out, I forget what gun was perfected. Those Brits knew how to build weapons of mass destruction back in their day. Some of the first sharpshooter rifles were created in Britain and brought here. And that's why the Union officers stopped wearing their shoulder pads during war, because that's how good the Confederate soldiers were at shooting. So just to push back a little bit, those guys could probably shoot better than Oswald or anybody else, regardless of the gun. But that said, real quick, one question here. That was also an era where you had to learn how to shoot being in the military. So was Oswald just like Four Eyes or a thick coke glass? I mean, because I keep hearing that. He was a bad shot. Why do people say that? I mean, obviously because he was, but what information is there that makes people think that?
I mean, I believe I've seen two different things on it, but now we have the CIA documents saying that he wasn't that great of a shot. But there's his service record book. Whatever, I'm not a military guy, but you know, when you go out to the range, you get your, what you hit and how far away. And he wasn't that bad of a shot. I mean, people are talking like you said, like his Four Eyes or he had cataracts or something. No, again, this was only like 50 yards. It wasn't a 300 yard shot. So, and to think of the first shot, that was maybe 20 yards, right? But the problem is he's looking down and the angular movement of the limo is going across his sight. But by the time he had the second shot, I mean, JFK's head was moved pretty still, right? Because it's just moving away from him.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so the first shot's the harder shot than the second and third shot because now it's almost like, okay, JFK's head's not moving anymore.
Right. So did he have a scope on that rifle?
Yeah, he had a scope as well.
Yeah, and I heard it wasn't that great, but it still was a scope. Yeah. Walter Cronkite actually did a simulation. They got some marksmen and put some marker, and they moved it along where it would have been the same height and angled down. And the marksman could not replicate it, and he tried numerous times.
They should have taken Tom Berenger out there. He would show them.
Well, my last thought on this whole thing before we close out, it relates to this, right? So I'm with you guys. Like Oswald had a hand in this, and he was one of the assassin, if not one of the assassins. I just don't understand because the people who say that he was a bad shot, most of their motives are to say that he was innocent. He was just some innocent guy who was just doing books, and he was caught up in this whole thing and thrown in as a patsy. But I don't understand the reason why anyone wants to declare him innocent. If he really did kill one of our, beloved presidents, and JFK was more of a conservative in today's world, a
conservative president,
and he killed him or shot him one or two times. What's What's the motive in saying that he's completely innocent just so that you can tar and feather the CIA? I mean, you can still say Oswald was a criminal and tar and feather the CIA or whichever group that you want to have and that Oswald had a hand in it, which is what I believe. So I have zero sympathy for Oswald. I just wish that Ruby didn't do what he had done so that we could have gotten to the bottom of all this back then. So
yeah. And it repeated itself. I mean, yeah. Epstein, yeah. So, Adam, I do have a question. I do have a question on the Kennedy clan, but any final words before we close this out?
Would I vote for Kennedy if he was alive today? I think I would, even because he was for lowering taxes. I'm that type of fiscal conservative.
He'd be a Republican today.
Yeah. I would say he would be closer to a libertarian like I am. And libertarians are like vegans. We'll just tell you what we are. And no matter what, you don't have to ask what I am. I'll just let you know. I'm a libertarian.
Yeah, no, I get it. My partner, Big John, who you met, he's a hardcore libertarian. We have part of our business here is a libertarian. My take is I love libertarianism, but we are not Adam and Eve before she bit the apple. You got to literally be a perfect human being to live that philosophical lifestyle, you know? And I don't say that as a knock. That's just always been my take. Okay, so real quick. On the Kennedy clan, your thoughts, Joe Kennedy, JFK, RFK, and we're left with Teddy. I mean, to me, that was God damning the Kennedy clan. I'm going to leave the worst one alive for you, Big Papa Joe.
Oh, he didn't kill anybody. No, not at all. Not with that car. Nah.
Exactly. So the final take on that, though, is another conspiracy theory. JFK Jr. and the plane crash.
Well, he was running against Hillary. That's just right. Saying, how many people died knowing Hillary? 51? All suicide?
I found it odd, you know. Gee, your thoughts before we move on to the final segment.
I mean, that's just a bridge too far for me. Yeah, I mean, JFK Jr. wasn't doing any favors by, you know, calling Joe Biden a traitor or whatnot. And, yeah, he was going to challenge Hillary, but I think he just, you know, ran his plane into the water or the ground. I can't remember which one.
I think Joe contacted Hunter in Ukraine. They got the mob involved, and that's why we lost JFK Jr. I'm kidding.
By the way, about JFK Jr., I was at my friend's house when he died, and he was a pilot. And he said, with that aircraft, with just the undercurrent, he goes, that could have flipped over that plane easily. And he said he was not surprised that he died.
I remember reading it. It was a G something. I do remember reading that. And it's just Hillary's. That's like low-hanging fruit. You know, I mean, the legend has it Hillary was in the Garden of Eden playing the role of the serpent. You know, that's how bad she is. You know, all right, guys. So since we were doing conspiracy theories and for the audience, I'm a wannabe believer. I'm like, yeah, I do want to believe in Sasquatch, in UFOs, in Loch Ness, in Atlantis, but I need some proof, fellas, you know? But I do believe, yeah, there's a lot of red flags. I go so far back into this that I did it was a speech class. I did an oral presentation on the Roswell crash when the first books came out, and I was good. I had that class asking me 10 million questions, you know, after the Q&A where the teacher had to stop me. You know, we could be here all night. So this is to be taken in fun. But, hey, if you truly believe it, I want to hear about it, too. You know, so what I'm trying to say is I don't want to embarrass you by thinking, what the hell is he asking that question? You know, so this is what we call a quick rundown. You know, just give you a couple of thoughts. I, as the host, reserve the right to ask you for more info or to pitch you against G. Okay, so the rude rundown number one, we'll start off with G-Man here. Is there any truth to the moon landing? To our producer, if you want to jump on, feel free to. Number one, is there any truth to the moon landing being staged on the Hollywood set? G-Man.
I know that you can actually take a telescope and look at the lunar landing spots and still see debris from our lander's craft. So I believe we landed on the moon. There's no truth to it being staged.
Adam.
Once I saw the documentary, because I'm like, this is bogus. And then I saw the documentary with how the light's reflecting, and it's like, it wouldn't reflect. And I'm like, it made me wonder. But there would have been somebody on that set blowing the whistle after how many years?
A deathbed statement.
Yeah, so I do believe that we went to the moon, but there's questions.
I am with Adam. I'm like, there's some serious red flags when you watch that documentary. And I also have questions because I read on the Fantastic Four, the cosmic belt radiation. Then I found out that's actually true. And I'm like, well, how did our 60s technology get past that, you know, with tinfoil? But
you guys just convinced me of something, of possibility. So I might backtrack and say maybe the video that they shot on the moon was so bad that they had to recreate it here on Earth to have something good to show on TV.
I
do like that. So if you put a gun to my head, yeah, we went to the moon. But the naysayers do raise some good points. All right, the rundown number two. Are there traces of truth in the U.S. government stashing alien tech in secret bunkers? And the context for this is Area 51, Wright-Patterson, the legendary stories of Nixon and Eisenhower meeting with them, and even past presidents saying, I can't talk about this. And even Clinton, when he tried to get info on Area 51, the court told him, no, you can't. Adam.
This is a question for my wife. She loves ancient aliens and all that. I am not one. So I'm going to say there's no such thing as aliens, even though how could we be the only planet with life when there's so right. So I'm just not entertained by aliens, but it's possible.
What about you, G? Have you entertained any aliens?
I believe the Fermi paradox, just like Adam just said, that, you know, it's a big universe and we're the one little speck that has Earth or life on it. But did they bridge the gap and fly over here and crash land and we're taking all their stuff? No, I think that's us testing our stealth technology and the government or the military benefits from saying, oh, yeah, aliens. Okay, yeah, whatever you believe.
So I do believe in them. I just – there's no proof, and I think there's government programs. There's reclamation programs. There's too many sightings, even biblical. So, yeah, I do believe. And I do believe the odds of we're not perfect beings regardless. So people who say, they came all the way over here and crashed, who knows? I'm not saying that we got him or this has happened or that has happened. But if I had to put odds in Vegas, yeah. Yeah, there's something there. So this one's fairly new to me that I always kept blowing off. But is there any truth to chemtrails spraying mind control chemicals or anything in the sky that those jet trails, chemtrails are creating or causing? Gee.
No, that would be way too high up there, and it would diffuse way too much. So, no, I...
Oh, let me preface that with they can make rain by spraying something in the air. The government has said that.
Yeah, that I agree, but the concentration is way up there and it stays up there and causes that, right? But for it to come all the way down and diffuse enough that in any more than just a trace amount, no. That plus, I've always been a sound mind as far as my wife tells me.
Adam.
It's funny because this one weatherman, he was talking about chemtrails and he on air. And he said that when he was in the military, they would dump all this metals way high up to just get rid of them. And that it being falling from the atmosphere, it would just disappear. I'm like, okay, I don't know how much I believe in that. But, I mean, it's not good because, I mean, according to him, he's dumping waste just to try to get rid of it.
You know, I don't know about mind control and all that, but I think our technology has advanced to they can put something. But I'm like you, G. I'm like, that stuff too. We're still generations away of that type of stuff. But then again, I thought we were generations away of being able to create rainwater at tossing stuff up there. So Who knows? But I don't put too much stock into it as of yet. Are there traces of truth in the Illuminati pulling the strings behind global events?
WEF, World Economic Forum, absolutely. I completely believe all of that. I think there is a deep state, a real big deep state, and I think it's global. And so, I mean, if you just look at what the World Economic Forum's trying to do, and you have all, you got Soros, you got Gates, and you have all these major corporate elitists, and they're all hanging out with one another.
Yep, I agree. G.
Yeah, I believe you meant the Illuminati being an actual organization, but I agree with Adam. It's like another different group. And the Illuminati, again, is like, hey, look over here. Yeah, it's Illuminati, but it's really these guys over here. Maybe it's the World Economic Forum. Maybe it's another more shadowy group.
I believe the WEF as an Adam. And I just, as an archaeology buff, I look at Göbekli Tepe in Turkey. How they discovered it, they started digging it. Once the WEF got involved, they kind of slowed down to a crawl. And that's a buried city, plaza, or whatever that was purposely buried, they determined. And it does not fit the time frame of what archaeologists tell us is true. And they're not allowing much more archaeology to happen there. All right. Is there any truth to Princess Di being taken out by a royal hit squad? Gee.
No, I think it was an unfortunate accident. Paparazzi trying to take pictures, and yeah, I don't think.
Wasn't the guy drunk too?
He was on like Quaaludes or something.
Yeah. Okay.
Diana's driver.
Yeah. He was high on something.
No. It was she was there with a Playboy, some rich oil sheik's son, and I think they were hammered, and he was driving. Yeah, I don't think they had a driver. I think he was driving. Adam, your thoughts.
Oh, I think that the driver, they had a professional French driver, and he was, I think he was on cocaine. So I don't think there was a conspiracy. I think the driver was just, didn't know what he was doing because he was just high on something, and paparazzi was just following.
I agree. Are there traces of truth in Nazi buildings? Our producer chimes in. Dodi Fayed was the boyfriend, and the driver bodyguard was high. Yeah, see, I agree. I think, you know, look, it was just Princess Di's time. But that said, before I move on, Prince Harry in the 60 Minutes interview or something said he believed that it was a body double or something. They're going to reunite later. I think maybe Harry was high then, you know, when he said that. Yeah. And Lord knows, he probably needs to be high every day to have dealing with Meghan. Yeah. Okay, so are there traces of truth that Nazis building the hidden fortress in Antarctica? This is in context to Operation High Jump, with all the data pointing that did happen, Operation High Jump. I'm not referring to the stories that came back, but that there was an Operation High Jump. Adam.
They tried and were not successful.
All right, fair enough. G-Man.
Yeah, I think they started to, but 1943 they invaded the Caucasus region because they're running out of oil. So there's no way that they even tried to finish anything because they're running out of fuel.
I agree. I think it's no secret. He was into the coal. He was looking. That was the era of Thune, of Atlantis. Mediums were really big back then. So I believe that. But I also believe what has happened is a small kernel of truth as to what you get their interest that blew up into all this conspiracy theories. Okay, is there any truth to the Earth being a hollow shell with a world inside? Before you answer, the Tibetan monks believe that the Earth is hollow. Their whole religious belief is based off that. Gee.
I mean, I watched the Godzilla movie, so the evidence is right there. we have a magnetic field because of the iron core inside moving contrary to the magma and all that. So, no, I don't believe that. But that would be wonderful if there was.
Adam.
Oh, I wish my friend was here. He believes that that Malaysian flight aliens opened up a portal and they went in. And so the same thing with in Antarctica, there's a portal to go into another world that's in the core. Yeah, he was telling me a lot of this stuff, and I'm just smiling. I'm like, please pass me some more whiskey. I need it.
All right.
I love what he's having.
You know what? That's one of those things that sounds like a nice romantic fairy tale. That said, I think we've only pushed like so many miles into the ground, but there's so many scientific theories about how the Earth is. I'm like, you know, you got to show me a hole in the ground with plants growing before I believe anything. Yeah. So are there traces of truth in Atlantis being a real civilization lost to the sea? Adam.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of evidence pointing to it because they found so many civilizations that have been buried in water. And so, yeah, I believe there is a plausible rationale to it. But
before you answer, G, there are a lot of words from civilizations that didn't know one another were Azatlan, Atlantis, similar words about a lost civilization. G.
So I did some research on this a few years back. There was this thinking that Plato misunderstood them when they said, I think it was 9,000 years, but they really meant months. And if you did 9,000 months prior to Plato going there, that would have been around the time that Santorini exploded, the volcano there. And now it's just Santorini Island. So I think there was a lost civilization. I don't know if Atlantis was the name or that's just what they gave it afterwards. But I think it was lost to a volcanic explosion.
Well, I think the answer lies in Egypt. I believe in Atlantis. I think there's too many legends from around different civilizations that talk about it. There's too many unknown structures that we have no clue. So, for example, you've got the Romans. They're in the Middle East, built on top of old structures, you know, and you can tell the difference. And how do you move all this? So there's something there. But again, we need some proof. And I think the proof, once we get technologically, damn those aliens, they need to speed this process up. You know, once we get the technology, maybe something will be found. All right, here's one of my favorites. Are there traces of truth in Bigfoot stalking the woods right under our noses? Gee.
I used to be roommates with the guy, but then he started shaving himself to clear up the excess hair.
Don't be talking about your wife that way.
I'm like, you're wearing a sweater, aren't you? No, I'm shirtless. Oh, sorry. No, I don't think there's any traces of that. I think it's just hoaxers doing that. And maybe some people thought they saw Bigfoot, but it was a bear. So, yeah.
Adam.
Gee, you stole my joke. I'm pretty sad. I was going to say my uncle, but anyway. There's no truth of Bigfoot, but the Loch Ness Monster, absolutely.
My take is this. There's so many legends from Native tribes. And so I don't know if there is. That's one of the ones where I'd like to believe it. But you got to give me some proof here, you know? All the proof is on, you know. And there have been documented stories of people dressing up in outfitted gurneys walking around. So you got to show me the proof. But red flag are all these Native legends that talk about Sasquatch before there was reason. I mean, I don't think Tonto was out there like, you know, out there putting the gear on, you know, hey, look at me. So I don't know. So number 10, is there any truth to Skinwalker Ranch opening the gateway or being a portal of dimensions there?
I mean, the military or the CIA would be right on it saying, how do we take advantage of this to conduct war? So, no.
They were. The government did, was there with, I forget the company, exploring it. And eventually they sold the land or sold their interest in that.
Oh, well, that's interesting. But I you know, if there's dire wolves or... What's up?
It was Bigelow. Bigelow Industries. They owned the land and they worked with the government to explore that.
Yeah, just like Bigfoot. Like, okay, if there are all these dire wolves and UFOs and Bigfoots out there, there's not just going to be one. There's going to be hundreds, right? Because presumably they reproduce and there's offspring. So, no, I don't think so.
And
completely agree with G.
There you go. I got a bonus question that I thought of as we were going along. Admiral Byrd said he flew into Antarctica and saw literally green vegetation growth, what he thought was a city, et cetera, et cetera. He took this to his grave believing that. I'll let Adam close it out. G, your thoughts?
I mean, yes or no? His compass was probably off and he flew over Argentina or South Africa. But no, I mean, we have satellite imagery. There's nothing. It's all ice. It's all white.
Adam.
They had white lilies. That's why.
And there you go.
No.
And there we have it, my friends. So everybody, I hope you enjoyed the show. Before I close it out, though, Adam, is there anywhere they can find you and your work that you want to let the audience know about?
I work for Megami Cable. I'm the operation manager by Megami.
And with that, I want to tell the audience, thank you for tuning in to our inaugural live stream. And before I forget, you can find this podcast and others like it at grumblingsmedia.com. You can bookmark it. You will find my political podcast there, my sports podcast there as well. And you can also find these podcasts at YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, under the profile handle Grumblings Media. I want to thank G. Mangani, my co-host on various shows, for joining in. And I want to give a big old shout out and thank you there to Adam Cameron for joining us and helping us fill in some of the thought processes of JFK. I don't know. We got no answers with the 80,000 file dump. We got more questions. Maybe this is one of those conspiracy theories that's going to be with us for generations upon generations. And if Bigfoot, if you're listening, call me. This is William Del Pilar for G. Mangani and our guest Adam. Until next week, this has been the Red, White, and Rude, and we bid you adieu.